Welcome back to Cognac and Conspiracies. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jade.
All right. And thank you all for coming back. Not me burping into the mic. Thank you all for coming back. I'm leaving it. Thank you all for coming back for another week with us. We're Cognac Conspiracies on Instagram. We're cognacconspiracies@gmail.com. And we love you all's interaction and suggestions. So feel free to reach out for us. But to us. It's my week. And I am going to talk about the Leicester Street Massacres. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't heard about this.
I hadn't heard about it either, but this shit is crazy. But like I said, it's pretty... We'll get into it. So we're going to start with a man by the name of Jesse Dotson. We don't know... Well, we do actually know a little bit more, I feel, than you usually know about someone's early life a lot of times when we do this types of episodes. So he was born to his mom and dad and grew up with a few siblings. Their family resided primarily in Memphis. So his mom met his dad in Memphis. And there's juniors and seniors. So, you know, I'm just gonna...
It's complicated.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna say like junior or senior, which might get annoying. But you have to differentiate. So he was born to his mom and dad. And actually, when his mom and his dad got married, his mom was like 15. And his dad was like 16, but I guess back in the day, they used to do that shit.
Oh, yeah, they did. People used to actually, like, I didn't realize it, but prom was like such a big deal because people used to get married. Like, people would get engaged like after prom, and then like at 18, they would get married and then just go on to like living life. Like, they would start their adult life at like the big age of like 18 years old.
Yeah, I remember one of my family friends, a lot older lady saying, literally just in passing on vacation, that the first time she got married, she was 14. And I was just like, excuse me? And she was like, yeah, you know, that's how we did it back then. I was like, okay then.
Both my grandparents got married really, really young. I think my mom's mom was like, well, my grandmother, my mom's side was like 17. And my mother, my dad's side, I want to say it was like 15 or something, like 15 or 16, like really young.
Yeah. It was a lot. I mean, the thing that people don't realize is, like, obviously, when that happens, like, you're not even fully functioning at that age. So you're bound to fuck your kids up. So his mom and his dad, they had kind of like a tumultuous relationship. Like, she would leave and come back and things like that. And then at one point, she went and got a boyfriend, took him to the boyfriend's. They actually stayed married after this. And then his dad apparently began abusing his mother, putting his hands on her. And that, I guess, kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back. And decided to move them out of the household with his father. I'm telling y'all this because basically he was fucked up. But there's reason why he was fucked up. His mom decided to leave. Didn't really explain too much. He just knew, like, okay... We left, and that was just that. So as we're getting like farther into his childhood, he also began to have like a lot of trouble in school. He had probably some sort of learning disability. He was finding it really hard to learn, and also he was having behavioral issues and things of that nature, probably due to what was going on in his home life. The school did reach out and try to, you know, get a meeting with his mother and things like that, but they kind of just were like, oh, every time we tried to speak with her, or every time we tried to contact her, or every time we set a meeting date, she would always cancel or she couldn't make it. But at this point, she was like a single mom, so she... You know, it'd be like that sometimes, I guess. She probably was just like, yeah, I have to work. But he ended up missing 40 days of school one year. He had to repeat the fourth grade twice. Not to be an asshole, but like, it's fourth grade.
Well, I think it talks awesome about how the system like failed him. Because like I said, to fail the fourth grade twice, something's gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, you have something else you need to talk about. And that's like when people, I'm sorry, y'all. That's like when people tell me I failed kindergarten. I'm like, how you failed kindergarten?
No, it's actually real. It's ABC, right? But failing, no, failing.
That's a thing, right?
No, but failing kindergarten is actually really sad, though, because a lot of times when kids, so let me not get on my soapbox, but a lot of times when children's parents, like, so basically, like, pre-K in the United States is not, like a given right for a child. So if your parents don't put you in daycare or pre-K, and you sit at grandma's house all day watching, like, her soaps or her shows with her, you probably won't, because, like, all of, like,
General Hospital.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, General Hospital, like, her shows. All day you watch her stories, right? That's all you do. Yeah. And cook with grandma. Like, those are great interpersonal skills. But, like, when it comes time to go to school, a lot of the other kids, like, know sight words. They know how to count. So, like, even though it is supposed to be, like, kindergarten's the beginning, they do make some assumptions. Like, you know, like, your kid could be writing and reading and all types of stuff. But in reality, like, that kid has actually been counting and seeing letters since they were, like, 3 or 4. So, I think, you know, if you did fail the first time, I don't think there's wrong with that. I think it is unfortunate because it kind of speaks on, like, you know, your pre-K.
You don't have to go to pre-K, but it's like...
But if you have nothing, though...
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think it speaks more so on the parents.
Oh, it does speak on the parents.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like, you didn't... Or, you know, it's different if you have some type of, like, it's extenuating hard circumstance. Mm. Like, I don't know, like a learning disability or something like that. I will understand. But, like, if you're a totally normal, the like, hitting all your milestones type of kid...
Yeah.
And your parents never bothered to read you a book, why was that? I'm confused. But anyway, moving on. Even as he progressed, like I said, he fell fourth grade 2 times. And then at the age of 16, he was still in 8th grade.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Wild, right? That's what I'm saying. I'm like...
How old? You said 16?
16. He was still in the 8th grade.
What is that? 11th grade? Where
you're
is that?
You're supposed to... It's 16. You probably be in 10th or 11th grade. And yeah. He was in 8th. He was still in middle school at the big old age of 16. Because he kept not... producing, not meeting milestones and things like that. Yeah. So as you can probably imagine, his life started going downhill fast. And at the age, he first went into the system and got a criminal record at the age of 15. These records have since been I probably sealed. I'm not sure. I was not able to find out why he was in the system. Just, you know, petty shit, I guess. Mm-hmm. Teenage stuff. But he was getting into trouble. And at the age of 18, he was actually convicted of a second degree murder. And he ended up getting a really long jail sentence where he basically what happened with the murder was they think it was like a drug deal gone wrong. Like I said, he had already been getting into trouble. And so things just went left and he was convicted of murdering a woman. So he was convicted of that that murder took place on January 8th in 1994. And he was convicted of that. And then he actually ended up getting out of prison in 2008. So he was actually in prison for 14 years for that murder. And in prison, he wasn't an upstanding citizen. Like, he just kept up with the bullshit. Like, a lot of times they're like, oh yeah, they got off for good behavior. No, not him. He was spitting on officers. He was stabbing people. He joined a gang. And just fully keeping up with the shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Regardless, he was released in 2008. And he was released into, you know, the custody of his family. From what I gathered, he had a very, or it's true, he had a very supportive family. So his father actually had a mechanic shop and he used to work and do like different type of like handiwork, and he had a business doing that. So he let him come work for him. And then he started, he lived with his brother and was kind of like, you know, so his family gave him some place to stay and he was having a job, which a lot of people, when they come out of prison, they don't have those things. So things were going pretty well. So we're going to hop over to his brother. He had a brother named Cecil, and him and Cecil kind of had like a little bit of a tumultuous relationship, but it's kind of hard to tell if this was I didn't hear anything, you know, with them growing up that sounded too left for siblings. Like, you know, they used to fight.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's gotten into it with their siblings. Like, you just do. But nothing that would explain the magnitude of what I'm about to tell you. So he had a brother named Cecil, and him and Cecil began kind of like getting into it, arguing, things of that nature. And it just kind of was going left in their relationship. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it was bad, but like I said, nothing crazy that I could find that would say that, you know, anything totally out of the normal happened. So his brother Cecil had a girlfriend. Her name was Marissa Williams. And so at the time, him and their children had moved to an apartment, and Cecil was working. I forget where they said Cecil was working, but he was working at as a handyman for an apartment complex. Okay. So he was working at an apartment complex. His brother was working for his father. His father had this business. Everything's cool. So one day on March 2nd, 2008, one of the mothers of Cecil's children came, because there was, you know, different, some of the children had different mothers, was calling him and, you know, texting him. She had a 2-year-old baby with him, and I guess she was supposed to pick the baby up. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't answering, which was unusual because, you know, we're co-parenting and we had a plan and you're not sticking to the plan. So she comes to the house and she knocks on the door, nobody answers. And she kind of noticed that, like, she said that the door was a little bit cracked open, and she kind of called out and nobody answered. No kids answered. Kids are loud. You know, it was just dead silent. She's like, but I could hear like a radio going almost. And so it was kind of like, she was like, yeah, that's weird. So she proceeded to call the police, and the police came in, and what they found when they came in was six bodies. Six. So there was his brother Cecil, his living girlfriend Marissa. There was two victims, Hollis and Shindra, that had, like, they just so happened to be visiting, which is like
people, like adults?
Yes, adults. They found their two nephews, Kamario Dotson 4, Cecil Dotson 2. Like, it was just like a massacre. Like, a 9-year-old, like, all these fucking bodies, all this blood. And of course the police, they were like, it had been there so long that, like, the blood kind of was like drying.
It had been there so long.
Yeah, like, they had been in there for a long, like, 40 hours. So almost 2 days.
What?
Almost 2 days they had been in there. Yeah. And like the blood, like, you know, there's a lot of blood in here and it's kind of dry. They were like, it was so evident that they didn't even bother to check the pulses of the adults.
And they had been,
because they've been new, right? So they're just kind of, I guess, walking around surveying the situation. Like I said, there's a 2-year-old, there's a 4-year-old, there's a 9-year-old. The craziest thing is there are some survivors, like the 4-year-old daughter and the 9-year-old son. I was like, this is probably the fucking creepiest thing I've ever fucking heard. Like, they're going through the house, finding bodies, and the 9-year-old was in the tub and he had a knife, like, in his head, lodged in his head. And of course the police officers are going to assume that he is dead, but he wasn't dead. Like, he turned his head and kind of, like, you know, looked at them, fluttered his eyes, and they were like, oh shit, like, you know, get in here, he needs help. And I was just like, like, ew.
No, but when you're younger, like, your body, like, your brain has a elasticity, because, like, when you're, like, little kids, they get, like, cancer and stuff, sometimes they, like, cut half the brain off, and their brain will, like, recover. But I think after, like, 17 or something, there's, like, a certain age where it's no longer possible. You can't do it again. Mm-hmm. So that's crazy, though. But kids do end up surviving. Like, I saw another murder story where the murderer had tried to kill a baby or something, and they mm-hmm. came in days later, and the baby was still alive, and mm-hmm. it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, and then he said, his son, he said that actually he was playing dead, like,
yeah,
because, yeah, mm-hmm. he stabbed him, and he kind of was like, he was, of course, I was in and out of consciousness for like 2 days. But you know, the fact that he got stabbed in the head, he hadn't eaten, and he just laid there for 40 hours. Because he was like, I kind of thought I was dreaming. Then I was like, no, I'm not dreaming. And I'm going in and out of consciousness. And like, it was just, I just didn't know what to do. I was a kid, so I just laid there. And then somebody came and found me. Mm-hmm. So they did end up rushing them to the hospital, where there were survivors, but also, like I said, he also had six victims, like six people mm-hmm. in the house who did not survive. So, like I said, because his injuries were so life-threatening, when he actually, like, kind of came to and, you know, he went to the hospital, they're taking care of him, and he, you know, kind of came to, the police came and were just like, hey, like, we really need to talk to you because you're one of the only survivors of this. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have anything to say? And he said he remembered the whole thing. Meanwhile, in between this time, like, in the few days, they were kind of like searching for who did this. They had no idea who did this, like no leads. They held a vigil, like they called people to the crime scene. And I mean, Jesse actually came to the crime scene, you know, as a family member, like walking around the house, like saying, oh, you know what happened? Things like that, which is not uncommon. If you watch a lot of true crime, a lot of times people who commit these type of crimes, like they can't
stay away.
They can't stay away. Like they want info. They're like, what do they know? Mm-hmm. Like, what are we talking about here? So he came to the crime scene, you know, put on the fucking act, boo-hooed and everything with his whole family, knowing damn well that he did that shit.
Well, it's more suspicious if you don't, right?
Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, if he didn't show up, it would be weird, but also it just, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand. So he actually came to the crime scene, but like I said, basically his cover was blown when everybody that he thought was gonna die did not die. And they actually noticed too that like all of the weapons that were found inside, there was two guns. Most of the adults or all of the adults died by gunshot wounds, and then the children died by stabbing. And you know, like I said, he put a knife in the other child's head. Mm-hmm. But all of the weapons that were used, they never found the guns, but the other weapons, like the stuff that he beat them with and the knives, came from right inside the house. And then mm-hmm. he did weird stuff. It was such weird shit. Like he like staged the bodies. Like he killed them and then he like put them in different positions to try to make something seem like he put weed in his brother's hand, and he like, this isn't funny, but he like pulled the wife's like shirt. I mean, they say they don't think that he raped her, but he like pulled her shirt up and like her pants down and threw crack on her. Why did you throw crack? Like, what is this? You know,
I thought he really thought he did a great job too. Right? I got him. I got this.
He was like, I just did this shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're right. Never going to suspect anything. But you know, there's a lot of things you can tell by blood splatter, yeah. Things. And it's like, if he was shot, his brother was shot multiple times. If he was shot multiple, why, how are you still going to be holding? It just.
You can also tell, like, the way the, like, if he sprinkled crack on the woman, I feel like they can tell it's sprinkled versus if it was thrown on, like, they can tell. Like, yes. There's all types of ways they do stuff.
Have you seen that Dave Chappelle skit? Because this one, what it made me think about, where he's like, oh, yeah, throw some crack on him.
No! I have not. I literally have seen almost, now I'm a whole black person. I've seen almost no Dave Chappelle.
Oh, my God. It's the funniest shit. But, yeah, that's what it made me think about. She's like, I'm just going to sprinkle a little bit crack right here, you know, they'll believe this. And I'm just like, yeah, it was just crazy. So they're like, whoever did this obviously knew the house, knew what was going to be in the house, and also they knew that they had like all of this time to then turn around and manipulate the crime scene, because if it's a random thing, you're going to be like, let me hurry up and get out of here. But if you know what you know about these people, you can be like, oh yeah, ain't nobody coming over here soon,
yeah,
like, you know, it's cool. Let me flip these bodies around a little bit, try to make it look less suspicious. It's like, okay, so you're weird. And the thought of dragging six bodies around, or more than six is just people that die. The thought of dragging eight bodies around is like,
yeah, and murdering the children with knives. Like the fact yes. that he was how do I say, like, the easier kill is the gun because you don't have to get it up close. Yeah. But the fact that he felt comfortable or needed to, like, get up close on the children and cut them with knives is or stab them, whatever. That's crazy.
And you know what he did after he stabbed them? He took the handles off the knives.
Why?
So,
because of his DNA? Yeah,
to try to get rid of, like, his DNA. You know how long it takes to remove a fucking hand? I can go in my kitchen right now. It probably would take me like 45 minutes to remove that handle. That is hard
to do. Yeah, I have no idea I did that. No.
That's hard to do. You really sat there and did that? That's... Talk about
I
it.
I guess he thought he had really cleaned it up, though. I feel like he thought he did, like, a thorough job and all types of stuff.
He put bullet... And then he didn't even take... I'm like, something was wrong with this man. They found bullet casings in, like, a plastic, like, a Glad bag.
And he forgot to take it.
Probably. Like, why would you leave the bag of
bullet casings? Forgot to take it. I think he really rounded them up and forgot to take it.
They really don't even know. Like, it just... That's why I always say, like, people always think, like, you about to get away with shit. And sometimes people do get away with shit. But 9 times out of 10, you think you're being cute and slick and you're not.
Yeah.
And you're about to get caught. Especially if you're in close proximity to this person or they know you to know.
And he has a murder rap. Like, he's been, like, he was convicted of murder prior. I feel like it's, like, the first person to look into, like.
Yeah. So, they basically said, so they're looking into different people, you know, asking all the normal questions. Did they have any enemies? You know, do you know of anybody who might do this? And basically they said that his other child's mother, the one who came to the house to try to, you know, when he didn't answer the phone, just, you know, she, I guess they weren't on good terms, you know, but so they at first implicated, or his family at first implicated her, and were like, yeah, the only person I know of that would have an issue with him is him, because they kind of were having a little bit of a tumultuous relationship with the children and things like that. But they quickly were able to see that she had nothing to do with it. She had an alibi and all those things. So she had nothing to do with it. And they're bringing everybody in. So they bring Jesse in. And he tells this story about how, like, basically they ran errands that day and they went to get, like, some weed and some, I don't fucking know, some groceries and, you know, whatever the fuck. I think he said the shit. I mean, they probably didn't go get some weed. Who cares? But I think he said that because he knew he put the weed in his hand, his brother's hand. So he's building the story, you know, with the police officers.
Yeah, and the coke was sprinkled, the crack, whatever, you know.
Yeah, he's building the story. And basically, they were like, okay, that's interesting. Thank you for your time, I guess. Moving on. And I feel like, or I know that a lot of times when police are kind of suspicious about someone, they'll bring them back in again to ask them the same questions to see, like, does your story change?
Yeah.
And a little bit every time his story would change. It would change just a little bit, you know? But it usually doesn't change. Like, if you're an innocent, you're not going to have a whole bunch of changing stories about a murder. They ended up, like, just, you know, going from there. It took a little time to apprehend anybody, and people went about their business. So one day the police came to they ended up having to go to a safe house because he also told this story about how his brother Cecil was involved with a gang. He said that his brother was part of the Gangster Disciples, you know, that is a gang. And so that he, you know, he was in some problems with the gang and, you know, maybe look into that. And it was so crazy because the Gangster Disciples actually got really mad that somebody would even say, because, you know, criminals have their own moral code.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, the fact that you would even say that we had something to do with stabbing a baby in the head is like crazy. Like, we don't mess with women and children. We just mess with people, you know, grown ass men who are in this life with us. So it is what it is. And it got so bad that they actually think that one of them, his mother's door got kicked in. So people moved into his mom's house and somebody kicked the door in and basically was trying to break in and things like that. And they think, they don't know, that was like kind of like a payback. Like, they were trying to get in to teach him a lesson. Like, don't ever lie on us and say I stabbed the baby in the head, because you know I didn't do that. And I wouldn't do that. So at that point, they took him and the whole family and moved them into like witness protection. And
they took him too?
Yes. He went to the witness protection program too. Ain't that crazy?
Wait, what?
Yes, he too was in the witness protection program, and he was the whole fucking murderer.
I don't understand.
He was the whole murderer.
What?
Yes.
His family never thought that, like, it could be him. I also wonder,
but why would they think that?
Yeah, because I'm like, what would be the motive, right? Like, I'm like, what would be the motive? But the fact that he says the whole thing about he saw all of them that day, like, unless I could find, or not all of them, he saw his brother, like, Cecil that day. But unless somebody else could say that they, too, had seen him, I think that I would still be hot on that trail because nobody else saw him. Like, I don't know. He's the only person that saw him.
I mean, well, he did. There was the guy who... The guy that bought the weed from was basically like, but he told a different story and basically was like, yeah, I seen him and I asked him a few questions and he kind of seemed peeved with his brother and basically said something along the lines of like, yeah, I'm not doing nothing. Just messing with my bitch ass brother or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was just kind of like, okay, don't know what to make of that. Moving on. And he was like, but yeah, when I saw him, I did see him and I did see them, you know, they were running errands, but it wasn't giving good vibes. Like, the vibes were off. But that ain't my business. I'm just here to sell what I got to sell. And I moved the fuck on.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like people did... He kind of, in my opinion, gave himself away a little bit. Because at one point when the police came to the house, he had a whole... For lack of a better word, a standoff. Where he pulled a gun on himself. And put a gun to his own head. And was like, everybody's trying to say that I did this. Like... Why are you trying to say that? And then it's kind of like, who said that?
I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take it right now, sir.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that I would never do. Like, if I was on trial for murder, I think the last thing I would do is put a gun to my own head. And be like, I'm going to kill myself because everybody thinks I did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe once I was convicted or something, I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to go to jail. But I don't think I would do that when I'm not a suspect. I mean, he is a suspect officially, but like, until, I don't know.
He wasn't officially. Yeah, that's the thing. They just bought him in the same way.
For questioning, yeah.
They always bring everybody in who was, they bought the weed man in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was just like, yeah, I don't know shit about that. Yeah,
that's a lot.
So, he put a gun to his own head and they were able to actually, you know, just basically talk him off the ledge and be like, hey, calm down. Like, nobody said you did this. Like, just chill.
That would have been a red flag for me.
It was. I'm sure it was a red flag. I'm sure it was a red flag.
It's like, he's not in court. There's no charges. There's no formal charges. Like, you're not in holding. You're free walking about. And I'm like, well, like, this is a lot. Like, just questioning alone gets someone to go to that length. I'm like, yeah, you got something to do with it.
Mm. So, even after that, you know, like I said, they were all taken. The family was taken because you done blamed the baby mama. You done blamed the gangster disciples. You done blamed everybody but your damn self.
Right.
So they basically, you know, for good reason, the family was very afraid of, you know, so they were in witness protection. And basically while they're in witness protection, they, ended up getting, you know, more evidence and finding out, you know, more things about the case and arresting him for the murder of his brother, his brother's girlfriend, their two friends. And two of the children. And then, you know, a bunch of other stuff as far as, like, stabbing people up and shit.
Yeah.
So, even in prison, this man is unhinged. I genuinely think he's unhinged. Like, he was just talking about... Apparently, at one point, he admitted to his mother that he did it. And then he said he didn't do it. And then he, like, admitted in the courtroom he didn't... Not in the courtroom. In the questioning that he did it. He took it back, and because when I was listening to like the court charges, because like I said, this 2008, they got recordings and everything like that. When I was listening to it, the guy was questioning him so hard about like, didn't you admit to this? Didn't you admit to this? He was like, well, yeah, I was being coerced and all this other stuff. And it's like, no, nigga, you did that shit. And even at one point, he said he changed his story again. I feel like this was the craziest lie. He changed his story again to say that he was actually there at the time.
And he was shot.
He didn't say he was shot. He said this grown ass mother. He said he hid under the bed.
And he was the only person.
And he was the only, well, not the only survivor, but the only person who left untouched.
I feel like that's enough. Like, that's enough right there. Like, you're done. That story changed. You're right done. Now. You know what? Just close the door on him. That's enough. That's enough for me.
Put him under the jail.
Yeah, nah.
It's finished. So he basically was like, yeah, well, actually, you know, I do have something to tell y'all. I was there, but like, I hid under the bed.
I'm like, but why would you say that?
Why you didn't call 911?
Like, what? Like, why would you say that now? Like, you gotta be shitting me. Like, come on.
Sir.
Why would you not tell anybody that?
Sir, stop it. Like, and why would you not, like I said, the speculation is, or the guesstimate is that these people sat there for almost 2 days.
Right. Why would you
So not? If somebody came into your brother's house and slaughtered everybody, like a mad person, even if you were under the bed and you happened to not, you know, they happened to not see you, once they left, why would you not immediately get up and be like, oh my God, you know, and call 911 and be like, right, I need help. So you
the
just
the minute you got out you, safely, I'd be like, help, help, help. Like, what? You just left?
He just left.
Your brother, like, what are those? His nieces, his nephews?
Yeah, and nieces, left nephews, them all for, brother, damn near sister-in-law, two of his friends. He knows these people, too. So it's like, sir.
That don't make no fucking sense. Yeah, I would have been like, that's
you're
enough,
not even
dude.
Making sense at this
I'm
point.
Like, it's, that's enough. I'm like, it's enough for me.
So, needless to say, nobody believes his motherfucking ass. And he was sentenced to 6 life sentences, one for every
person.
I guess, yep. Oh yeah, one for every person. And he's still alive, from what I gather. He's still on death row. And he is awaiting his death. I never understood when people say 6. I'm like, how many times can you die? But I guess that's the principle.
But isn't a life sentence actually not a let me look that up.
You can get 25 to life, or you can get like life for real.
Okay, because I thought sometimes life was like
But he didn't even get life; he got death.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He got sentenced to death. Like, they're going to put him, not put him down. Like, he is a fucking dog, as far as I'm concerned. But they're going to put him down. Like, he's done. And they said if we could, we would do it 6 times.
Yeah, that's always wild. It's like, who do you think that makes it feel better? Like, if my relative got killed and they're like, yeah, 6 life sentences, I'm like, yeah, I don't really feel better. Like, yeah. I don't really, because like I said, they can't bring them back and kill them again and kill them. Yeah. Like, the reincarnation, and they're like, down with them. Like, they just get the, like, that's not a thing.
It's so. Like, as much as you, you know, when somebody touches your family in that way, as much as you wish you could bring them back and kill them and bring them back and kill them, you can't. So it's like, I mean, but I understand. It's the principle.
Yeah, because every person, it kind of does have it for, like, even the friends who were killed and aren't attached to their family, it gives justice to them, because mm-hmm. then when their families look at it, there is, you know, it's almost like, it's not symbolic, but it's like giving that family the justice, because there is like a life sentence for them there. Mm-hmm. So hypothetically, this man did become invincible.
Yeah.
They, you know, they do it 6 times over, so.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, the children and things like that, the surviving children have done, especially the boy who, his junior who was stabbed in the head, mm-hmm. he remembers the most, and he actually was a key witness. They've done interviews, you know, and things like that. There's a first 48 episode about it. I encourage y'all, if y'all are interested about more, to watch it, but he basically was, like, a key component in, like, finding out who did it, because mm-hmm. he told them, you know, once he woke up from his injuries in the hospital, he was like, no, I remember exactly. Like, I remember everything. I remember him coming in there with the gun. Mm-hmm. I remember him shooting my parents. Yeah. And then I remember him coming after me, and I remember him coming after my siblings. And that's when I just kind of played dead. And he's like, I mean, he's my uncle. I know him. Mm-hmm. I know who it was. So I'm just like, damn, that's a crazy thing to live with.
That's a crazy thing to live with. So he's not any type of program. He's just living life like.
No. They said that they get. I mean, that's their, I guess, personal family stuff. But they said that they're in therapy and like.
I guess he was adopted, or where they.
He lives. They live with the grandmother.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They live with the with his dad's mom. So yeah, they live with their grandmother, and you know, they just, you know, I've done a few interviews, and the grandma was like, yeah, you know, obviously. I guess one of her, I think, exact tools. She was like, obviously, I wasn't expecting to be raising children at this point, but like, you know, I'm doing the best I can with my family. You know, we're having a good time, mm-hmm. and you know, I make sure that they're in counseling, and they have to deal with. Obviously, even though he survived, he has a lot of injuries and a lot of effects from the injuries that happened. So she was like, we're in the programs, we're in counseling, and we're just trying to do the best we can at this point. And that's that. But he was like, but they asked him, asked Dan, do you really think about it? And he was like, no, I don't really think about it. I'm just trying to, see my therapist and move forward.
That's good.
And do me.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, good. I'm glad that, he probably will have a lot of damage from it, but I'm glad that at least they're making strides to help them move on to live, like, normal lives. But, I mean, that's just, like, really sad. It is. I always think it's so sad when we do episodes where the signs show early.
Yes.
But this person is, like, dangerous, and, like, it's, like, you really have to do something about it. And I think it, like, even, like I said, maybe, like, to me, when you were like, oh, he had to repeat the second grade twice, like, that's a red flag for two things. I feel like it's a red flag as far as, like, one, this child might have a learning disability, or they have, something that's preventing them from learning, like, on level, what's expected of them. And secondary, I feel like, again, the example of a kid comes in and they fail kindergarten twice or three times, right? Something like that. It kind of shows that their family might not even have the resources to help them with that at home. Like, maybe the mom works a lot, the dad works a lot, or maybe they live with grandma, right? And grandma just doesn't have it in them to be up at 9 o'clock doing, like, math problems, like calculating how many apples somebody has. Like, grandma doesn't have time.
So if,
like,
Johnny had six apples.
Not for real. I thought grandma doesn't have time for that. Something in those cases, but there should be some type of support where the school system or somebody is like, hey, this kid has a problem, and we know that their family probably doesn't have the resources to get them therapy, medication, whatever. Maybe we should, how older people have, like, Medicare. Well, everybody can have Medicare if you. But maybe something like for children. I don't even know if children can even qualify for Medicare. But something like that to provide, like, supplementary resources to, like, children. I feel like a lot of times they'd be like, yeah, like, something's not right with Johnny. But then, like, we do nothing about it. We're like, yeah. We're like, that sucks. Like, sucks to suck. Because they're like, yeah. It's just really sad to see stories where the signs are there, like, so early. And then stuff happens. People are like, what? I never knew.
I don't know. I think that they were shocked. But like you said, they always knew something was, as black folks say, he not wound too tight. he ain't wound too tight. But just because somebody's not wound too tight does not mean you think they're going to commit a whole massacre to your brother. And then he kind of said, like, and this could be a full on lie. Like, who knows? Because Cecil's not here to defend himself. He doesn't. We don't know. That his brother basically, he was like, oh, he snitched on me. Like, he called the police on me once upon a time and basically accused me of robbery that I didn't do. And I'm like, nigga, knowing you, even if you probably did do a fucking robbery. And basically, like, he said the same thing about the gangster disciple thing. Like, oh, he called the police
on his ass.
Right. I'm like, and I hope they get him in.
He really needs to stop talking about this.
I'm like, expedite that death sentence.
He'll get one more death sentence. They're going to add one more on top of it.
Go ahead and expedite that bitch. Go ahead and do it. But he basically was like, oh, yeah, he called the police on them, and that's why they were mad. And it's just, they weren't able to verify any of this information. I feel like dude is a whole ass narcissist and a whole fucking liar.
Yeah.
And he just was trying to build a story to... I mean, maybe his brother did call the police on him. I don't know. But it just kind of, there's a missing component. Because when people say, what was the motive? There's a missing component for the motive as to, like, you can be irritated with your brother, but this was, like, next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did you do this?
Because, like, what made him snap and then everybody had to go?
Nobody knows.
Or maybe, maybe it was, like, that convoluted, that, like, weird thought in his head where he, like, he thought he could cover up the crime. Maybe he killed his brother first and was like, oh, there's witnesses. So now everybody else has to go. Like, maybe it was that. Chain of thought, but either way,
He said after the fact, I think he fully expected to, like, go in there and kill all the adults, like, with the guns. Or whoever happened to be there, because he was going to his brother's house. They had been together that day, but he said that he only did the children because obviously I'm their uncle and I saw that they saw me, so then I had to get rid of them too. So I don't think it doesn't really matter, but I don't think the children were his target. But he was just like, okay, like we talked about, he's trying hard to clean this whole fucking mess up, and they saw me and they're my uncle, I mean, I'm their uncle, and they're probably like, Uncle Jesse, what you doing? And they're like, goddamn, if I leave these kids here, they're gonna be like, Uncle Jesse did it, so they gotta go too. That's when it totally went left. But luckily, he was not successful in his attempt to murder everybody, and his nephew woke up and was like, hell nah. Hell nah. Like, I know exactly who did this shit. At least I got some justice. Because imagine if, I mean, he probably would have got caught eventually. If not for this, somebody who does something like that, they're going to do it again. Just like he was already just like he was already in jail for murder, and then he did it again. Like, once a murderer, always a murderer, right? But even if he didn't get caught for this, he probably would have got caught again. But it's just fortunate that some of them survived to tell the tale and let the police know, like, no, I seen it.
Well, yeah, I'm glad I got justice. I'm glad the children survived. It's really unfortunate for the other victims. But I got some more stories. Per always, watch your people. Make sure your people get help. Really, really care about people. Because, like I said, if you know someone's off with somebody, you got a little niece, a little nephew, a child, and somebody's up with them, try to get them the best help they can get. Don't just be like, blank, blank is off. And keep it moving. That's a black people be.
They're off.
They're not right.
Yeah.
Don't let someone in your family be not right. And then when half the family gets murdered, you're like, I never knew.
But like, yeah, you know, little Jesse, he ain't right in the head. But you know, moving on.
That's Happy what Thanksgiving, it is. Right? So yeah. So maybe that's the lesson. Just look out for your people.
That's a fucking fact. But yeah. So like I told you, I picked this one because it was a little bit straightforward. I was short on time. So that's pretty much it. There's no, you know, somebody was convicted for it. And there's no real conspiracy to this one. But you guys like the true crime and things like that. So, yeah. Any closing comments?
No, that's it. Just if you... That's it. I just said, if you have somebody, you know, you might be like... They do kind of sound a little bit not right. You know, just try to get people help. That's it. Try to get them to talk to somebody. Get them to open up. Give people the help they need. Because a lot of things are avoidable if we just, you know, cared a little bit harder.
That's a fact. All right, y'all. Like we always do, drop it in the comments. DM us. Let us know what you thought about this one or if you've ever heard about it. Because apparently, like I said, there's a First 48. It's not popular, but it's not obscure like some of the other ones.
Yeah, I ain't heard about it.
But yeah, there's episodes and there's things, a lot of, you know, interesting information on things. There's interviews from the children and things like that out there. So let us know what you think.
Yeah.
We will be back next week. We are Cognac Conspiracies on Instagram. We're cognacconspiracies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think, and we will see y'all next week. See you later.
Bye.